Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Kevin Poole, 18 years of volunteer and career experience, a captain on Ladder 301 for Somerville Fire Rescue in South Carolina. Kevin shares an experience he had during his younger years when he thought, as he describes, being invincible finally caught up to him. Fast forward years later, as a company officer, he gets a phone call that forever changed his life. Mental health is a very important topic for Kevin that he doesn't take for granted and wants others to know the days of leaving your feelings at the door before coming into work should be past tense. With that, I present Mr. Kevin Poole.
All right, yeah, my name is Kevin Poole, Captain Ladder 301, Somerville Fire and Rescue. 18 years on the job so far, combination volunteer and career. Started out in the early 90s as a teenager, got into an accident and was cut out of a car. And the first trip out of the hospital, I wanted to go thank the fireman that cut me out of the car. And that prompted me to want to follow that path. So I started volunteering for a short spell and got into the business world and chasing girls right afterward. kind of strayed away from wanting to follow that path. And later in life, I guess it was about 32, 33, I would imagine. I saw a sign, Volunteers Wanted, Pine Ridge Fire and Rescue. And that's where I met Jeff Thompson, who's no longer with us, and Chief Ben Waring, who's become a really good friend of mine. And also helped me into getting my foot in the door at the City of Charleston Fire Department, which I spent 7.5 years, and then had a hiccup and made a move to Somerville Fire and Rescue, where I've been at now for going on 8.5 years, and captain of a tiller ladder company, and you know, couldn't be happier. So that's me in a nutshell, how I got to where I'm at.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Perfect. I'm going to throw you a little question here. What does the term aggressive mean to you?
Aggressive. Aggressive means taking action and, of course, necessary action. I guess it could be positive aggressive and negative aggressive. And I lean toward the positive aggressive aspect when it comes to that. You know, not always waiting to be told or waiting on an order. I guess that would be my definition of aggressive. You know, as long as it's tactically thought out and executed, and you're doing it to achieve a positive goal and not being reckless in the process. So that's what aggressive means to me.
Okay. All right. I like it. I like the answer. So with you being a company officer and definitely climbing through the ranks of your departments, are you in favor for a years of service clause for promotion?
Yeah, I am. And I'll elaborate why, but that comes with experience. I mean, just by being there, you run calls, you see certain things, you gain the experience to move up and into those ranks rather than, you know, coming straight into the job. And let's say, you know, your education is maybe higher than another candidate, or, you know, you've gotten, you know, more certifications and, you know, had the time and the effort to put forth to gain all that, you know, knowledge and, or the education and the certifications, where, you know, some of us didn't, you know, like me, for instance. I mean, running a business and trying to be a fireman, I probably drug my feet a little longer than most trying to get to where I'm at today. But I think that you should have time on the job before you promote, if that's going to answer the question. And that's just to gain the experience that's needed to be at that level. I think that you should be held to a certain time frame as a driver before moving to the right seat. You should, you know, definitely have time with the department alone, in my opinion. If you're not hiring from without, you know, from the outside, you should have time of service with the department before you move into a captain's or a leadership role at any level, just so you can, you know, gain the respect of the people that you're going to be working with and leading, you know, coming in from the outside. And it's going to be very difficult to do that. And if you don't have, you know, the time in each level, I just don't think you're going to have that respect. It's going to be an uphill battle for you. I think it's a recipe for disaster. That's my opinion.
Okay. No, I like it. I mean, it's your opinion, but I definitely like the answer. I truly believe you should take the time in each role to get to know each role. And then, you know, then when you're ready to promote, decide to do that. So I'm 100% with you.
Now some of us are forced to move, you know, faster than others just because of staffing and requirements, all that stuff. I get it. But even still, when, you know, I think you should master the backseat before you, you know, even think about getting behind the wheel, and spend some time behind the wheel before you even think about moving to the right hand seat. That's what I did. You know, it took me a while. I mean, I did make driver rather quickly, but I still rode backwards and, you know, rode in that back seat as often as I could or was allowed to before I thought about even, you know, promoting for engineer.
Okay. I was going to kind of segue to my next question. I was going to ask you is what clicked, or when did you decide, hey, I'm ready to move up to that front right seat?
Oh, wow. I guess whenever I moved from the city to Somerville, and there was lots of opportunity for advancement there and moving up in the ranks. And I had some age on me. I came in to the fire service, you know, paid as an older guy. So I guess that kind of propelled me a little bit from the admin side to say, hey, look, you know, you should be doing this. You should consider moving up. You should, you know, consider being on this team, or, you know, helping out with training and this, that, and the other. And I guess that's just because of the age, you know, issue that they were dealing with me. And I had a passion for driving too. I mean, I love to drive. I was into the whole pumping thing when I was on an engine. When I finally made it to the truck, or actually I got forced onto a truck, but I drank the juice and I love it. there's nothing better. But once I started driving the truck, man, that was it for me. You know, I knew that I had found my calling and I found my niche, you know, within the fire service. And this is what I wanted to be a part of. And I was going to, you know, do what it took to, you know, stay there. I mean, and of course, whenever we acquired Tillers at Somerville, and being, you know, one of the first guys that actually got to train and bring back that training to our department. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be one of the Tiller instructors now. But it was just a passion of mine to, you know, to want to get to that right hand seat also. And I knew the steps that our department required. I knew the time, you know, that was needed and the classes that were needed. So I just set myself up for that. And I didn't like seek out and let it know, hey, I want to make captain. It's just when the opportunities present itself, and I knew that there was the openings coming and the time was to test. I stuck my neck out there and I, you know, tried to put my foot in the door, and I was lucky enough to be chosen. And, you know, I was on the list. Of course, there were several guys ahead of me that promoted in the same class that tested, but yeah, I wasn't number one, but I wasn't the last one either. So
right. No, I get it. I get it. Okay. All right. Now I've met you a couple times at different outside training events.
That's
so
right.
My question to you is, how big do you think outside training plays a role in being a better fireman?
Well, without a doubt. I mean, I don't know if you're not wanting to be a, well, how should I phrase this? If this isn't your calling, if this isn't your passion, and you're not trying to master your craft, then you're just going to sit back and do the bare minimum and get what your department gives you. If you want to master your craft and you have a passion for the fire service and a passion for what it is you're doing or what it is you want to do, then you're going to seek out that outside training. You're going to go to conferences. You're going to go to different, you know, socials and events, FDIC, all that kind of stuff, because you're going to gain so much more than what you're going to get out of the IFSTA manual or you know, IFSAC manual or just whatever your local department's going to train you with, which is going to be the bare minimum to certify you so that they can check a box. You got to get out there and get to those outside training events. You meet people that are like-minded, and you gain so much more, so many more tools for the toolbox. I hate using that saying, but it works.
Right, right.
But you know, you add so much more to your arsenal, and you can bring that back, and you don't have to be, you know, a subject matter expert at it. And that's definitely what I'm not. I'm not a subject matter expert at anything, but I think I'm pretty well-rounded. You know, I've done some time within the department and within the fire service, and I feel like I've got the respect of the guys as, you know, as a leader and instructor, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they'll take what I bring back and maybe even accept it. And if not, apply it, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, the best training I've ever had was from outside sources. I mean, I could go down the list and name them. I don't want to name call anybody, but there's some tremendous outside sources that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be sent to by my department, paid for myself, you know, gotten experience through the Fools organization, you know, all that stuff. Right. So yeah, but by far, hands down, better training outside than I've ever gotten within my department.
Okay.
And I'm not knocking, we have one of the best training facilities in probably the Southeast, if not the country, you know, where we're at, little small, you know, Somerville Fire and Rescue. We're well known for, you know, having a very good training chief, a training cadre, everything. But, you know, and that's because, you know, Chief Tennyson sends guys every opportunity and every chance he get to outside events, constantly every year sending groups to FDIC. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's without a doubt, one of the better places to be in our area.
Okay. No, I totally get what you're saying. You're definitely not knocking your department, but you know, it can kind of, I'm trying to use the right word. It can kind of get a little like, you know, most departments kind of follow the same script, if you want to say, if you will, you know, yearly that, all right, we got to deliver this, that, and the other, but there's going to be so many times after a while, you're going to know the layout of your own training building. You're going to know where certain things are. And
right.
So to mix it up, man, if you can hear an instructor from the outside with his different perspective, or he tells you how they do things that are different from your department, you can just kind of correlate the two together and just go like, wow, like I never knew this, or I never knew this tactic, or I never knew this method.
Right. Exactly. And it's, you know, there's all of us do the same basic thing. You know what I mean? You know, engine company ops, truck company ops, RIT, special ops, all that kind of stuff. Everybody's doing the same, you know, setups and same, you know, training and drills and that kind of thing. But my experience has been, you know, when I go to these outside training events, you know, I gain, even if they're doing the same thing that I've done time and time and time again, there's always one little extra nugget that I pick up, you know, like, oh, wow, he tied that, you know, bowling faster than the way I could do it. Or, you know what I mean? And this is how he did it. And that was cool. Or, you know, different drag techniques, you know, when we're doing RIT training and ladder throws. I mean, I've thrown a ton of ladders in my time, but I've picked up something every time I go to there. I never felt like I've been to a outside training event or whatever and come across or come back disappointed. You know what I mean? There's always something to gain, even if it was lame. You know what I'm saying? Even if the fire was lame, or maybe a couple of the instructors were lame, there's always something that you can pick up that's positive.
Right.
And even those negatives, you can bring back and say, "Hey guys, we definitely don't want to do that. I saw this here, you know, and we don't want to implement that here, and this is why, you know, or we don't want to act that way here, and this is why." You know, that's the biggest thing that I've taken away from a recent training event, and I'm not going to call it out, but it was the attitude of a couple of the instructors, you know, that I saw it in people that were there, firemen that were there that only had literally 3 and 4 weeks on the job. And they were lost. You know, they weren't gaining anything by the attitude that was given and the treatment that was given, if that makes sense.
Right.
And me as an older, I guess, you know, more seasoned guy, if you will, and I guess I can consider myself that, I witnessed it and felt the same thing that they were, you know, and I could hear the grumblings. You know, I wasn't even wearing a red helmet there, so they had no idea, you know, what my rank was. But I didn't acknowledge it, and you know, but I picked up on that. I came back to my company and came back to our training division and told them what I experienced, and they were like, okay, got it. Mark that company may not be on our to-go list next time, you know, kind of thing. So even the negatives, you can turn into positives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it's one of those things, you know, when it sucked that you guys had to experience that, because like, you know, a lot of the people that go to this, I mean, some of them are fortunate that their department pays for them, but a lot of them go out there on their own dime. So to get that kind of, like, I would definitely feel a type of way about that, because, you know, it's all about everyone that's there is there to learn. And so everyone learns at a different pace, but like, nobody wants to have any attitudes or belittlings or anything like that. Like, that's just not that,
right.
Yeah. That's not a good look.
No, it wasn't. And again, it wasn't the entire cadre. Right? It was just one or two, but you know how a few can spoil a whole bunch. And that's unfortunately what happened. Other than that, the training we got was good. I mean, some of the drills that we were working were good. The fires were decent. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
But I've taken something away from every outsource, you know, outside training event, social. I mean, anytime I've gone to FDIC, which I've been about 3 or 4 times now, you know, I've always gain another nugget that I can, you know, bring back and put in my hip pocket or bring back to the guys and maybe help teach somebody else.
Understood. Okay. All right. My next topic for you is leadership. It's a buzzword. It's a hot topic going on in the fire service now, from great leaders to lack thereof leaders, or just individuals in the roles that pretty much forget what being a leader truly is. So with you being a company officer, how do you try to set the example for your crew when you guys are on shift?
Well, I'm very fortunate. First off, I've got a rock solid crew. I've got a rock solid engineer. They make my job very easy. We're very gelled together too. I mean, get along. It's been the best company that I've had my entire career. Even as a, you know, a backseat probie fireman, you know, I've had some work with some good guys, but right now these guys make it real easy for me. And I think I definitely try to lead by example, I guess. I get out there with the guys, and you know, when it's time to wash the rig, I'm washing the rig with them. When it's time to clean up from, you know, dinner, I'm doing, number one, I cook dinner, so I shouldn't have to clean, but or my engineer usually cooks, but it's either him or I. But I'm always doing what I expect them to do. And you know, when it's time to blow out the bay, I'm the first one on the blower, and then somebody will try and come and take it out of my hand. But I you know, I just make sure that I don't want to treat them the way I was treated by some of my past company officers.
Right.
Like that, that was what I took away. And I'm kind of glad that I had those officers so I can know how not to be, you know? And then I had some really good company officers too. So, I mean, I think I've been led by some of the best in the business over the years, coming from the city and now being at Somerville. And, you know, a lot of my previous officers are now, you know, chiefs and, you know, admin chiefs now. So I'm not a hard nose. I'm a real easy going guy, just because I went through some hard times at first with some really shitbag company officers that would really just come in, turn the TV on, say, hey, read the calendar, whatever's got to get done today, do it. And I'll see you on the call. If we don't have a call, I don't want to see you. You know, and we didn't train, you know, when it was time for dinner, it was about the only time we saw him if we didn't catch a run. Mm-hmm. But that taught me how not to be, you know what I mean? I want to stay engaged with the guys. You know, I want to be part of the drill. I want to be part of the activities that are ongoing in the station and outside of the station, you know? And that's not just to try and be their friend, you know. I just think it's important to always stay, you know, remember where you come from, man, and don't be above the lowest guy there, you know. But don't get me wrong, I don't expect myself to have to wash the dishes, and I don't expect myself to have to scrub a toilet, but I'm not above it, you know.
Right.
I'll be the first one to, you know, go grab the stuff, but somebody better come grab it out of my hands fast. No, I like I said, I've got a great bunch of guys that I work with now, and I couldn't ask for a better crew. So I hope, I know it, that's the only thing that's guaranteed in the fire services change. And that's one thing that definitely changes is guys come and go, guys promote, you know, advancements happen, career changes happen. So we're not going to stay together forever. It's just, I hope I'm fortunate enough to pass on the same work ethic and mentality and expectations to the guys that come in behind them.
Right.
You know,
right.
I hope they can just fit right into it, you know? And I know that's a big ask, but hopefully if I'm still the leader and, you know, it's worked thus far with these guys, hopefully it'll be a natural transition for who takes their place. If that ever happens.
Okay. Fantastic. Love it. I'm sure the, any of the listeners that are listening are kind of wondering, like, he keeps mentioning Charleston, but he says Somerville. So, and you said you're definitely very open to talk about it, which is fantastic,
right?
Because that's
damn
the
right.
Only way we can learn is by,
yeah,
you know, passing down what we have been through in life. So, for those that don't know, you were a member with Charleston Fire Department in South Carolina.
That's right. That's right. I started out as a probie. I was the tip of the spear right after the Sofa Superstore fire.
Okay.
Actually, that's one of the things that kind of prompted me into wanting to join there. Was I worked directly with three of the guys that perished in that fire, that were part of the Pine Ridge Fire Department, and one of which was a personal friend of my dad's and actually cut his hair for many years, Billy Hutchison. Mike French, Brandon Thompson, those are guys from Pine Ridge. But anyway, I started out there as a probie, went through the classes, made it third driver, spent most of my time driving downtown on the peninsula at number 6, number 8. And those are pretty tight houses and usually didn't send guys down there that they didn't know couldn't drive. So I guess, and nobody ever bragged on me. Like I said, they kept sending me back. So I guess I did a half-assed decent job. But at a certain point, I guess I was feeling a little invincible when it comes to partaking of some extracurricular activities. I was quite a pothead back in the day as a kid growing up, even as a young adult. Never did anything to excess, but it was definitely you know, a party favor of mine. And one day after work, I had some guys, I own a fence company also, and guys were hanging out at the house after work. And, you know, some things got passed around. I felt, hey, man, I'm not going to get drug tested anytime soon. They haven't tested me in years, you know? They don't do that shit. So I tried it. The very next day, on duty, out of Cannon Street, I go to leave on a run, and the garage door abruptly come down on top of the cab. Nobody can explain how it happened. Fluke, radio transmission interference, whatever, because the openers were ancient there, and it tapped the top of the cab. The old wooden archway door popped the bottom sash and put a tiny little scratch in the cab, so it was no major damage. But policy was any damage or accident at all, zero tolerance, automatic, your analysis. So, the battalion chief didn't think anything about it. It's like, all right, hey, we got to go do our whiz quiz. Come on, let's go. So went down there, did that. They tested it, could not give it a positive. It come up like a false negative or false positive, however you word it. They had to send it off for a gas spectrometer. And that took about 2 weeks. So I was sent home, paid leave, and waiting on test results. And of course, I'm pacing the house, knowing that I was gonna get found dirty,
Right.
but not really making a plan, still kind of crossing my fingers, like maybe the FedEx truck will roll over or something, and I'm gonna get out of this somehow, so no, I got a phone call one afternoon from a doctor, some testing lab somewhere in the United States, and he says, "Hey, this is Doc so and so. I got your test results back. Is there any logical reason why there would be THC in your system?" And I don't know if he was prepping me to lie or come up with a story or whatever. But my daddy, he raised me with, this old saying, and I'll remember it till I die. Don't ever lie, cheat, or steal. And if you can abide by those three things, don't ever lie, cheat, or steal, you'll do fine in life. So I wasn't even going to start lying at that point. I just said, "No, sir, there's no logical reason." And he said, "Okay, well, my next phone call's got to be to your to the administration of the department." And I asked him, I say, "Can you hold off on that for about 20 minutes? Give me 20 minutes." And he's like, "Yeah, sure, I could do that." So I raced home, typed up a nice resignation letter, and shotgunned it to everybody who needed it at the time, and went ahead and resigned before they would eventually terminate. So,
Okay.
and then of course, I thought that my career in the fire service was over, that nobody would accept me. And then I happened to go knock on Chief Warren's door at Somerville Fire and Rescue and laid everything out to him. It was just as transparent as I'm being right now with your listeners, and told him the story. And he looked me dead in the eyes and he goes, "You know what, Kevin? Everybody deserves a second chance. Everybody." And he said, "And I can't guarantee you a position here, but I can get you an interview." So he put me in front of the panel of the interview committee, and I was fortunate enough to get hired on, and here I am almost 8.5 years later. So, but there's any lesson to give to anybody who's listening and that's doing anything, to jeopardize their career, think twice. I mean, you're not as you're we are all vulnerable. And don't ever think that you're invincible, and don't ever think that, Murphy's not going to catch up with you at any given moment, and you're not going to be able to get out of it. So just make wise choices. That's all I'd say.
No, absolutely. First off, I appreciate you sharing that because, firemen, and you, of course, you can attest to that. Firemen don't ever want to be wrong. They don't want to, well, at least some of them don't want to have negative light shed on them. But for you to be able to come on here and talk about that openly, willingly, admitting your mistakes, everybody makes mistakes. That's the thing I feel like today's world just doesn't understand. Like, nobody's perfect. Like, everybody has skeletons in the closet. And it feels like society just from the get-go, they judge you. It's no longer innocent till proven guilty. It's guilty till proven innocent,
That's right.
And
That's right.
it's shameful, especially when you have especially in a fire service, in the firehouse, where people just love to talk, but they don't know what's going on with that individual. You know what I mean? Like
That's right.
everybody's going through something, and firemen are the best ones to hide it.
That's right. 100%. Learn that firsthand. Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, and that it this kind of goes
It
with
does.
the next topic. So I'm gonna
Yep.
let you have it too. Go ahead.
Yeah, please. I mean, while the feeling's raw, because you gave me tingles right there. I ain't gonna lie to you. So this past Friday, 22nd, was the 1 year anniversary of us losing Alexander Scripp. He was my tillerman, and he took his own life a year ago, and it's been a hard year for his family, his fire family, and definitely, all of us as a crew without having him with us today. But it's exactly what you just said. We're perfect at hiding things. We deal with instances, and we react with dark humor, and we don't take things literally. I guess it's just the way that we deal with some of the things we see and hear and do. And there comes a time when you need to maybe take a step back and listen a little closer to what somebody's saying, or maybe dive a little deeper into what somebody may be going through on the outside, and maybe we can make a difference, or maybe even prevent something like that. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, there were all kinds of signs that we could have made a change and made a difference in Alex's life, because it really wasn't. But there were a couple little clues, and that's why I think it's so important for mental health awareness now to be, in the forefront of, the initial training of Proby firemen. I mean, we start them off right off the rip, and we start teaching them about extinguishers and hose loads and ladders and all this kind of stuff. And then on the very tail end, when you get to, the HR moment or whatever of your training, oh yeah, here's the EAP card, by the way. If you ever need anything, call that number. By the way, your assignment's over here, And it's just kind of like a box checking of a necessary, HR issue. And it's not put in the basics of training, from your training division within your department, that, hey, this is what you're going to experience. These are thoughts that you might have, that these are feelings that you're going to potentially have. And it's no longer the day where we should be telling somebody fresh to the floor that leave your feelings at the curb and pick them up at the end of shift. That, not to say, it's all rainbows and unicorns and we're going to, hug you every moment. Definitely not. But we need to be mindful that these emotions are real, and we're all vulnerable, and this could be any one of us at any given time. There's no skin color, there's no, uniform that identifies, or makeup that says this person is suicidal, or you know what I mean? You can't just look at it and say that one has the potential, or because you would have never guessed that Alex would have considered something like that. But the things that he had gone through, and I'm not going to spill all his, his issues or his old bones or whatever skeletons in the closet, that's not for me to do. But he had been through a lot in his life, as a young man, and it carried over. And I had some relationship issues that I guess couldn't deal with, and he had a sudden loss of family member. But I think if we would have maybe been a little bit closer, as I don't know, man, it's hard. I'm getting emotional talking about him, and I'm you know, trying not to be, but it's
Right.
raw. You know what I mean? This was real. This is the first time that it's really been in my face, because I guess I put the blinders on and said, you know, this kind of thing will never happen in our crew. This kind
Right.
of thing will never happen in our department. You know, this kind of thing will never happen to me. And as a leader, you know, I was never trained on how to deal with it. You know what I mean? That wasn't part of any of my training on becoming a captain. You know, hey, here's the employee assistance program phone number. Show them about that. You know, if you've got a problem, seek help before, you know, b beforehand, and we'll try and save your job. But if it's, you know, afterward, it's too late. All that kind of shit. But just be closer with your guys, and that's why I reach out to some of them, especially on the extended details now, where they're, you know, they've been out of the house for quite a while, and you know, driving an engine somewhere else, and you know, call them up and say, "Hey, man, how's it going? Checking in on you. What's going on with you?" You know, and I'm not wanting to know where they are in their next promotion or their next advancement or whatever. I want to know, "Hey, man, how's your mom doing? How's your dad? How's your brother? You know, what's going on with you?" You know, and maybe some of that give them the opportunity to unload on me, so they're not harboring, you know, those feelings. Or maybe they're willing to come out and talk to me about, "Man, I'm just having a tough time with this girl," or whatever, you know. And hopefully just that unloading of, you know, that bucket that gets filled, you know. And Steve Gillespie said it best, and he, you know, I learned this from him, because he's one of my mentors. He's one of my good friends. You know, I reach out to him when anytime I've got an issue, no matter what it is, mentally or, you know, even, you know, leadership wise, you know, Steve's my guy. And he gave the analogy that, you know, mental health within us is, you know, like a cooler, you know, and the water goes in the top, and if that spout at the bottom, you know, isn't used or opened up, you know, that cooler is just going to keep getting filled, and eventually it's going to overflow, you know. And that spout needs to be our mouth, you know. And we need to talk about it.
Right.
We need to ask questions. You know, we need to be, you know, vulnerable and not be afraid to speak up. You know, there's no harm in doing that. You know, you're not weaker because, you know, you come forward and said that you have a problem with something. You know, it doesn't make you a stronger guy to keep your feelings inside and never shed a tear and don't show emotion because you're a strong, hard dude. And you know, that's what's expected of us because we're firemen, right?
Right,
No,
right.
we're humans. We're not just firemen, we're humans. And we have emotions, and we have, you know, lives outside of the department that directly reflect on, you know, our attitudes and our emotions within the department, and vice versa. You know, what we experience on the job and what we do on the job carries over to our home life, you know. And you got to be willing to talk to your family, your loved ones, you know, your leaders, your brothers next to you in the back seat. You know, you got to be willing to talk to them so that we can try and avoid another Alex Scripp, you know, another, you know, any fireman contemplating, you know, hurting themselves or in any way, just reach out. My phone's always on, and I don't care who you are. You know, reach out to me directly. You know, I'm willing to talk. I may not have the answers. I'm definitely no professional. I'm no counselor. I'm no psychologist. I'm just a normal dude that has seen firsthand, you know, the effects of losing somebody that was, you know, in my company, in my crew, and that I considered a friend and a brother, you know. And the pain that he thought that he was getting rid of
Right.
was passed on to his family and to us.
Right.
So that's what you don't want to do. You know, my instant reaction when first hearing of it was complete anger. I mean, mad. And I was mad at him. I like, how could he do such a thing to us, you know, to his family? And that probably stems from me losing my son. I lost a son in 2020 to a vehicle accident 2 weeks before his 25th birthday. And he didn't make that decision to take his life. You know, that it was accident, vehicle accident, had no control over it. It was a fluke thing. It happened. And that was my initial, thought towards Alex, was I was so pissed off at him for doing that when, he had a choice. You know what I mean? He should have reached out to me. He should have reached out to any one of us, and maybe we could have helped him through that, But then I went through the other stages of grieving, and everything else that comes along with it. And, I'm no longer angry at him. I think he has definitely helped our department out as far as, us realizing this is real and it can happen to any one of us, and that we want to take measures to help prevent, or, just to help anybody. We didn't have a peer support team within our department. We've had the Low Country firefighter support team, that deals with everybody locally, but nobody, personally within our family that we could turn to and ask for help or, ask for advice. And now we do. And I'm proud to be a part of that too. So I don't know. I hope I'm not going on a tangent about it, but I'm pretty passionate about the mental health aspect of our job now.
Right.
And I think it's really important that, we acknowledge the vulnerability of all of us, and that we acknowledge that, the things that we do on the job, and, the life experiences we have off the job are, detrimental to our own personal mental health, and we need to understand how to deal with that.
Right.
And
No.
I think the first thing we can do is talk to one another. After that, it becomes, getting into some counseling, some professional help, maybe medication, which I'm totally against. But, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes, But
No,
that's it, man.
I get it. I mean, like I said, there's no rambling. I'm letting this, it's something that has affected you, and I'm sure, unfortunately, that I have to say this, it's gonna happen again to somebody else, to another department. So yeah, I mean, it's something that you've experienced and you've gone through. But I also want to add that this is where I feel like certain departments are, I mean, I can probably say, I mean, I can probably say a majority, even though some of them are starting to realize this. But when you were going for company officer, I guarantee you that was not discussed. That comes along with being a captain, right? Like, what I'm saying is, fire departments for promotions to company officer focus more on tactics and not about, hey, this is what you need to do if somebody in your company comes up to you and says, hey, I'm going through a divorce, or I have a substance abuse issue. You know what I mean? Like, that was something that was
Right.
not presented to you.
No, we did have a scenario that was very subdued and very theatrical in nature, to put it bluntly. But when it's real, when it's a real deal, you know what I mean? You don't know that there were the boxes to check, because let me be perfectly honest, everybody else who's taken the test and is promoted comes to you and says, hey, this is what you're going to experience. This is the right way to answer it. This is the wrong way to answer it. You know what I mean? So you're prepped. You're prepped and polished and ready to shine for that promotion, And it's up to the chief to give you the badge. You know what I mean? You better be deserving of it. But they've got to check the boxes, you know what I mean? And say that you went through this and you did this and you scored well enough to be put on the list, But when it's real, are you going to know how to handle it? Are you going to know who to reach out to beyond yourself, how to handle it? And those are the things that need to be talked about and need to be acknowledged, And what are the real signs? You know what I mean? What are the real warning signs of somebody who's dealing with some issues? Somebody who's been normally squared away and, is a go-getter and always willing to train, all of a sudden is, sleeping in, or calling out, or, calling out sick, making excuses. I mean, are those signs? You know what I'm saying? What's going on? how do we question that person without them, you know, drawing back from us,
right?
You know, or lying from to either to us. You know what I'm saying? Because we can sugarcoat shit better than anybody. You know,
right.
We are car salesmen. And the only reason I know that is because I was a car salesman for 8 years before I decided to get into the fire service. And I know what that's like. And we are salesmen. We sell ourselves to people every single day. Every EMS call we go on, we're selling ourselves to that patient to take trust in us that we know our job and that we can fix their problem. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we sell ourselves again whenever we're up for that promotion, get in front of that panel, you know? So we're perfect chameleons of our environment. We'll blend in and adapt to whatever we have to make shit happen. And I think that's why we're so good at deceiving people of what's really going on inside. So how do we tap into that? That's what I don't have the answer, but right. that's what we need to understand, that we're good at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we need to take the extra time, the extra step, the extra measures to try and help avoid another Alex Scripp.
Right. Right. And I think you definitely hit it on earlier, for sure. To me, you hit the nail on the head where the whole mantra of leave your feelings at the door, don't show your feelings, firemen don't cry, firemen don't do this. Like, you know, I firmly believe we're not wired to see the stuff that we see. Like, you know, nobody's meant to see that. Like that, you know, whether it's a adult, an infant, a young child, the news that we have to give to whoever's there of, hey, we tried our best, your loved one did not make it. You know what I mean? Like, that's all that compiles, especially when you go through a streak of just bad calls.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, somebody needs you. That's why I usually tell anybody that wants to become a fireman or that is a fireman, find somebody you can talk to. And it doesn't have to be your spouse, because I don't want to put, like, I'm not going to be as blunt and share everything, because, you know, they're just, some people just don't need to hear. But if you can find somebody that's in the same field as you, that's the person that you can confide in and talk to, because hopefully they'll be like, hey, man, I experienced that a year ago or 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
I know what you're going through.
Well, you know, and honestly, it, I don't mean to name drop it again, but, you know, Steve Gillespie, dude, I can call him and just unload, and he'll just sit there. And sometimes he just, yeah, I feel you, man. Yeah. Doesn't give me any answers. Doesn't mm-hmm. give me exact, you know what I'm saying? And then when I'm done, I go, man, I feel better. And he didn't say a freaking thing.
Right.
It's just a person that I can unload on, and maybe even just get on the phone and cry to, rather than to my wife. Cause I definitely don't want my wife worried about me every time I walk out of the door, every time I go on shift.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Scared for what I'm at, or maybe even try and convince me to leave. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Cause I don't want that. I definitely don't want, I love what I do. I love the job that I have. It's the best job in the world. And I'm ready, you know, to try and be a part of somebody else's, you know, or solve somebody else's worst day, or, you know, help better somebody else's worst day. I guess that's the way I should put it, you know? And that's what I live for by going on shift every day. And of course, being with the guys and, you know, being a part of that, and just, you know, riding the rig, man. So I definitely don't want mental health or my own personal mental health to get in the way of that, you know?
Right.
And that's the point that I just think it's really difficult to try and, you know, put your finger on or pinpoint. These are the signs we need to look for. These are, you know, the issues we need to make sure we avoid, and blase, blase, blase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't think we're not going to fit into a perfect little box and be able to, you know, see it with our crystal ball and all that other good shit. Yeah. You know, we just got to be aware. Got to be aware that the potential's there, and the admin's got to be, you know, on board with supporting any efforts whatsoever when it comes to that. You know, like making the station tours, you know, individually meeting with people instead of group settings all the time. You're like, companies together, company meetings, or, battalion meetings. Nobody wants to open up in that, nobody wants to speak out about, whatever it is, but maybe every now and then breaking it down to a one-on-one and be like, hey man, how's it going with you? You know what I mean? What's going on at home? Did you get the new car? Did your wife get that promotion? How's your kids? How are their grades? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Beyond what you're trying to do in the fire service, because, we spend more time with each other on the job than I do time with my own family off the job. So why wouldn't those moments be taken advantage of?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So
now you hit it.
I think that's a good way to maybe tackle the issue. That's just my opinion.
No, I get it. I get it. I mean, if it were so easy, regarding that topic, because I'm picturing right now the Paul Combs illustration of the two dudes on the back of the rig, and one of them is holding a sign that says "Help, I'm thinking about suicide." If it, only it were that easy, but it's not.
That's right. That's right. Nobody wants to show vulnerability because we're superheroes, man. You know, we ride the big red rigs and wear the cool gear. You know, we're there to solve other people's problems.
Right.
You know, we don't ask people to solve our problems. People ask us to solve theirs, and that's where we, within the organization, amongst your peers, that's where we're going to make a difference. It's not going to be from an outside counselor or a chaplain that stops by every 6 months to check on you to see how y'all are doing. You know, that's not going to be the time that you're going to gain anything. You know, it's going to be from within the house. It's going to be from within your crew. Within your department. That's just the way I see it.
100% agreed. Okay. Fantastic. Last topic for you. And you kind of hit on it briefly, communication amongst the rank and file, definitely talking to just hearing you talk. And definitely when I, did my interview with, Chief Tennyson, Somerville's got communication going for them. And it's my opinion, but I think my opinion is a fact on this, that most successful departments and or crews, the reason why they are successful is because communication is paramount.
100%. 100%. I'm not going to bootlick anybody. And definitely don't mean to be, but we've definitely got a good thing going at Somerville. From top down, everybody's got an open door. You know, we expect everybody to follow the chain of command at certain with certain issues and this, that, and the other. But I think any given day, from the lowest level, you can walk into anybody's office and ask a direct question or ask them for some advice. And we've got a tremendous leadership, a strong leadership where we're at. Well respected. I'm not trying to bootlick it, by no means. It just happened naturally. Our chief now has come from within. He started as a probie within that department. Has been nowhere else, and now he's the chief of the department.
Mm-hmm.
Our deputy chief, same thing. All of our admin, I think, Tennyson and Savage, as far as the upper echelon, they're the only ones from the outside, but what great leaders they are. I mean, well respected. I mean, just because Tennyson and I come from the city and we've got a history there together, but I joined up with the training division and helping out with FDTN and RIT and ladder company ops and that kind of thing because of the mindset and the drive that he has for the job, the culture that he's trying to create. I'm definitely not going to be a smoke diver. Definitely not. I'm too old for that shit, but I applaud him in supporting guys that want to challenge themselves to that level,
Right.
And then getting the backing from our admin to, hey, pay for that if they make it,
Man, no, that's
so,
awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. They got to pay for it initially, but if they graduate, the department will reimburse. And we support guys that go to, even, classes like Flames, South Carolina, SC Flames, and, not just Georgia Smoke Divers, but, anything that anybody wants to try and venture out to do, they get the opportunity for. And I think that goes back to the communication aspect is, Tennyson and our chief and our battalions, they, the email thing is just endless. There's opportunities to communicate with any of them at any given time. And, if you want to seek outside training or you want, an outside vendor or whatever, I mean, all you got to do is ask. So, and I think when it breaks down to the lower level, as far as our communications go, we're a tight-knit, smaller department comparatively to some of the other larger departments around us. But, we work well together.
Right.
The two truck companies on shift work well together, train together. Our surrounding departments that we run mutual aid with, we train together, we work well together. So I think all that goes full circle with communications within too. Nobody's trying to be better than one another. We're on the same team. We've all got the same common goal. You might have a little bit more, a few more stripes on your class A's than I do, but we all put our pants on the same way,
Absolutely.
So.
Fantastic. All right, man. Kevin, I really do appreciate you coming on and talking about certain things you didn't have to. Whenever I get a guest that wants to come on to talk and they explain it's because they want others to learn from their failures, that's what makes the fire service great. Like, you know what I mean? I kind of correlate it to any line of duty death. They always do a report, and we most departments try to read those reports so they don't make the same mistakes that unfortunately caused the line of duty death. So I feel like with what you're doing, opening yourself up, being vulnerable, is definitely it's got to help somebody else out there that could have been in the same situation or is in the same situation that you were once in. So I just have to say thank you.
Hey man, I'm glad to be a part of it, and I really thank you for letting me be a part of your podcast. It's been interesting and enlightening, and it definitely this helps me with my own personal mental health too. Because I'll talk about what I've experienced and the feelings that I've had. It's just going to fester and make it worse for me. It's the only way that I can heal.
Right.
So I appreciate it, and I thank you for it.
No, I appreciate you. Before we head out, will I see you again this year in Charlotte?
Yeah, man, I got a plan
Okay.
on coming. Absolutely.
All
Absolutely. We
right.
had a good time, and that was good training, and there's too many good people that I don't want to continue that I want to continue to surround myself with that I met there. So
Okay.
that I wouldn't miss it for the world.
All right, fantastic. Fantastic, man. Like I said, I appreciate you coming on, and I got to give a shout out to Chief Tennyson because he's the reason why I'm able to talk to you, because he was like, hey, he sent me a text. He's like, I got a guy for you. And I'm like, all right, send it. So I appreciate you, Chief Tennyson. If you're listening to this episode, thank you for the hookup.
Yeah, and I wasn't bootlicking Chief Tennyson.
I
I love you. I love you. You know that. You know that. But I'm just not going to be a smoke diver.
Copy that, man. You have a good rest of your day, pal.
Right. Thank you, Danny.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.